Well, thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you, man. I really love your approach, and it's refreshing to be able to sort of without embarrassment or sort of hostility talk about these things, instead of being pressed constantly to defend, you're able to just talk.
Yeah, a magic world is kind of exciting and fun.
How do you know Doug? Has he been on the show?
I'm trying to remember the context of why, what I was interested in before, but he's been on twice, and I had him actually on election day. It was a really weird moment because we just weren't there yet. It felt like we entered a new world that day, but when I talked to him in the morning, we were clearly in the old world.
Well, yeah, I talked. It's funny. I talked to him the day before, and he seemed, at least to me, to have a sense that, things might change. I don't know if he believed that it was going to happen the way it did, but I think he saw that there was, a real, this is a real contest between sides of reality, and like me, he's got a mischievous side. I think, he likes to see exciting events, even though they may be troubling events, just because they sort of demonstrate the flow of history and so on. And so yeah, I sat that night. I was live tweeting the election for Harper's, and watching the shift from the old to the new. And it was startling to watch the cable TV people, who I think were as bought in as everybody to the polls and the predictions, see the moon pass over the sun or whatever. It was like seeing some astral phenomena that you weren't prepared for. And everybody was just kind of, I think almost stunned. They were quiet in a way. And I was too. I was like, what the hell? What kind of world am I going to wake up in tomorrow? But, living in Montana, I got to say, I was prepared for it. I knew so many people and had met so many people who were secretly, whispering about their support for Trump, and they came from all walks of life. And I kept thinking, wow, Nate Silver and the statisticians and the pollsters may not be getting very accurate information, because there's a lot of people whispering or keeping their cards close to their chest, and they're going to come out, So I wasn't shocked. I wasn't shocked.
I mean, so that's what I was talking about, like with Doug, on election day, was this yearning for change where the establishment is this imposing thing that is not beneficial to very many people anymore. And so it's interesting because people, that yearning is present in all walks of life. It's just how, what is the vehicle to try and bring, deliver this change?
Well, change is often is messy. If you read the Bible, you know that a lot of the, great leaders of the Old Testament are very strange people who to pick for their role. You have Moses. Now, I'm not comparing Trump to Moses, but you have Moses, who can hardly speak in public, who's so shy and so on, and he turns to God and says, "Why have you picked me for this job of leading Israel out of bondage?" I mean, so in other words, the historical figures who turn up at times of change are often incredibly unlikely, and it wouldn't be change if they weren't unlikely. Now, how we're gonna ride this wave, and whether it's taking us a good place or a bad place, or it's just merely opening new opportunities for us to choose, I don't know. I'm one of those who is resisting a knee-jerk, absolute hostility to what's happening. I feel like it came from someplace real. And it's not my place to decide that it's evil or, menacing. It's my place to try to look more deeply into it and see if there are any opportunities here or lessons or, Trump might be the lead to the renaissance of liberalism. I think in some ways the Democratic Party sort of forgot about average people. And they may get back to a kind of attention to, the plight of people, out in the middle of nowhere, kind of trying to make it work. I kind of hope that happens in some ways. But
From a weird synchronicity standpoint, there's this oddness with, so the tarot cards are these archetypes that are just useful storytelling narrative tools to kind of, they tell the story of a life. The
yes.
tower archetype is like this ego, this kind of thing that you have to build up and then dismantle. It's so bizarre how there's this connection between, and Trump, they call the major arcana the Trumps, and so you have the
Yeah.
Trump Tower, and the whole purpose of the tower card is that it's the God-struck tower that it collapses. So like from that standpoint, that's the thing that really undoes me, is this idea that maybe his role is to show how superficial our whole society is so that it can collapse to something real. Like you found, closer in Standing Rock. It's like what is at the foundation of reality? What would a new world look like?
That's a fascinating. You're talking to Doug. You're talking to a guy who has two tarot cards drawn at random, tattooed on his right arm. That the only tattoos on my body are two tarot cards that I drew at random. And I told the tattoo artist, I said, "Whatever I draw, you're going to tattoo it on me." And I drew the Wheel of Fortune, and I said, "Okay, that's kind of a small one, and it's sort of a very open one. It's as ambiguous kind of as it gets. So let's pull another one." And then I got the Knight of Swords, which is probably the best summary of my personality in the deck. Somebody who kind of go hurtles forward, on a kind of mission without really knowing where he's going, bravado over sense. And so I hadn't yet heard a tarot based commentary on this thing, and that's awesome. You're right. I mean,
And then
because
taken
every
from
day.
another year, 2016, if you think in terms of the years, the 16th card is the tower card, and so the 17th card is the star card, which is the star of hope that leads you out of the collapse of the tower.
Yeah. Well, I did you sort of come up with this, reading yourself, or is it something that's being talked about?
Well, I mean, yes, I came up with it because I was playing this game in terms of it was just a fun exercise to see how the year behaved as. So I think I started doing it like in 2012 or 2013, that okay, here's the next Trump in the series, and then when we hit 2016, I was thinking in terms of the tower, but then all those things came together. So
Interesting. Yeah, and it's really weird. I mean, his pre-presidency is unlike any I've ever seen. Every day I turn on the internet or whatever, and they say, tech leader, Silicon Valley tech leaders summoned to the tower. He's holding a kind of rolling audience with all the, Kanye West went there, the other day. Kanye West, and then Tim Cook and Jeff Bezos, and you know, all these leaders, they're all coming to the tower. And, you know, he's even indicated that he's going to preside part-time from there. You know, I thought, boy, Barack Obama must be feeling kind of like, here I am sitting in this old building with a bunch of old paintings on the wall, you know, trying to, you know, govern for the last few weeks of my presidency. And here's this guy in the center of Manhattan in this gilded, you know, penthouse atop this tower, you know, holding audiences with you know, all the powers. It's a weird contrast. But you might, you know, towers are meant to fall. You know, Tower of Babel. You know, you're absolutely right. Trump represents some kind of hubris, a consummate hubris almost. You know, I wait for the first time that events completely outflank him and he is humbled by, you know, a sudden war, a disaster, a natural disaster, how he's going to deal with that, something that's totally ego confounding, you know, because that's going to happen. And that's going to be the moment when Trump meets, you know, that which cannot be governed, only, you know, endured or lived through. He might change, you know, I mean, in some ways, he's probably never faced anything as big as some of the stuff that's going to happen to him. And will he be able to keep his sort of cocky, ridiculous sense of, you know, mastery? I don't know.
Well, it seemed like that's what I saw in his face at that White House briefing. Like, that's the only time he's appeared in any way humbled, I guess. And then he almost like just kind of waved it off and resumed his normal.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, the funny thing about the election is it wasn't a contest between Donald Trump and everything. It was a contest between him and Hillary Clinton. And speaking for myself, I saw Hillary Clinton as the carrier, the manifester of everything that is old and a little bit inert about our politics. You know, she had $2 billion through her foundation. She was connected to all the, you know, monarchs of the Middle East and, you know, all the various, you know, traditional constituencies of the Democratic Party. She was a bureaucrat, you know, and versus some kind of, you know, Promethean lightning conductor. And I went to the Republican convention for Harper's, and I watched Trump's speech, and I my Twitter feed, if one went back to it, was pretty prophetic. I said, there's no way Clinton can match this. The guy got up and spoke, and he was universally derided the next day. But what I saw was somebody who, through, you know, dumb luck, accident or whatever, was speaking in a way I'd never seen a politician speak. Maybe, you know, maybe in a way that's very upsetting. And I went, wow, these are two different realities that are clashing here. This isn't just your normal deal. I remember thinking, if you're just taking a dynamist view of things, there's a dynamism in this phenomena that I don't perceive in the other one. And energy wins out over, you know, inertia sometimes. And, you know, and energy is an inherently volatile thing. The Trump thing is as volatile as it could be. It seems like any day it could go in any direction, you know?
Yeah. Well, I gotta get to work this morning, but really enjoyed talking to you, and I look forward to more of your work.
Okay, Doug. Thank you for having me.
You bet.
We'll talk.
You okay?
Okay.
Take care.
Yep.
Bye-bye.